Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland on the road in Salt Lake City, Utah. Monday seems so long ago. The bailout failed. The Dow dropped by almost 800 points. This whole week's been like a game of rock, paper, scissors to figure out who's to blame for all the uncertainty.
We got a big problem.
At the end of the day, this is not about the Democrats or Republicans. It's about our economy and what's best for the American people.
Well, the American people might be unified in one thing, confusion.
Because of this, are you doing anything different with your own personal investments?
Buy, sell, stay put. There's a psychology to investing during these times, and we'll help you pick your own brain. Coming to you from KUER in Salt Lake City, Utah, this is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. From station KUER in Salt Lake City, this is Marketplace Money. So, are we on the road to ruin? That's the question we're asking as I and my colleague Amy Scott crisscross the country to find out how the financial crisis is affecting you. I started in San Francisco this week, then on to Reno, and now we're in Salt Lake City talking to folks about the bailout plan and what comes next. I'm Tess Vigeland. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com.
When you go looking for Main Street reactions to some national event, it's always helpful to find them on Main Street. And that's exactly where I found Lamb's Grill Cafe here in Salt Lake City. It's a local institution that started in Logan, Utah in 1919. It moved to this location in 1939, having survived the Great Depression. It's an old-school restaurant with white linen tablecloths, bar stools up front where you pay the bill, and a back room where politicians and other grandees gather for the power breakfast and lunch. That's where I sat down with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker, a Democrat, Stephen Eccles Denkers, a lifetime resident whose great-uncle served as Fed chairman in the 1930s and helped create the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. That's the government agency that's protecting the money in your bank. And also John Spiros, the owner of Lamb's Grill. I asked him how the place made it through the crash of 29.
They actually thrived during those times, and during the Depression, they figured out how to get through it. George Lamb lowered his prices, and they tightened their belts, and they worked hard and got through the Depression years.
Given that kind of parallel, I mean, a lot of people are saying that we could be headed for something akin to the Great Depression if something isn't done about this economy. Do you see any parallels in terms of your customers, what they're talking about, what they're worried about? Are people talking about this at the lunch table?
I don't know. I'm always too busy to listen to what my customers are saying, but as far as this restaurant goes, I mean, we're actually having a record year.
He has seen a drop-off recently in the number of people frequenting the restaurant. Little bit of a lighter lunch crowd, he says. Spiros blames gas prices and an overall skittishness about the economy. But one thing residents of Salt Lake City do have going for them is low unemployment, 3.5% compared to a national average of 6%. But like so many of the people I've met on this road trip, Spiros is still confused about why the government is bailing out Wall Street.
From a business standpoint and a personal standpoint, my retirement and all my investments, et cetera, I hope they do the bailout to put a cap on that hit. But on the other side of the coin, I think they ought to let the businesses that fail, because nobody's going to come in and rescue me if I don't run my business right. You know, I sit back and listen to these guys talk about, well, they need money to pay their payrolls, they need money to buy goods. I mean, I've been in this business for 54 years, and I've never borrowed a penny to run my business.
Not a penny. But that doesn't mean his customers shun credit. 8 to 10% of our business used to be credit cards, he says. Now it's more like 80%, and nobody pays cash. One of the other common themes I've heard on the road is that people have a hard time believing, or at the very least conceiving of, the dire portraits of economic doom that are being painted by the likes of Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke and Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, among others. Spiros looks to a different oracle when evaluating the crisis, Warren Buffett, who recently invested $5 billion in Goldman Sachs and $3 billion in General Electric.
He's spending a lot of money shoring up companies that he knows are financially solid. They have been financially solid. Now, I just wish he'd come and invest some in Lamb's. Because we're financially solid. I just hope he finds me.
And maybe me too. Everyone at the table nodded in agreement. And so I moved on to the mayor, Ralph Becker, and asked how he's seeing the financial crisis play out in his own life.
I'm someone who, for better or worse, pays almost no attention to what's happening to my retirement money day to day. It's like, well, I guess it's going down. And I'm glad I don't have to be pulling money out of it today. But I know people who do, and they're scared to death.
They know eventually whatever is happening at the national level will filter down here. Even a city with low unemployment is bracing for the effects of a national recession.
We may be Salt Lake City, and people say, you know, turn the clock back 10 years when you fly into Salt Lake. But the fact of the matter is, we're part of this country, we're part of this world, and we've got to chip in like everyone else. Whether this is the right solution, I don't know. But we need to try to help our country and ourselves get back on our feet.
If you didn't listen to the television, we really wouldn't be scared here in Utah.
That's Stephen Denkers. His great uncle was Mariner S. Eccles, Federal Reserve Chairman under FDR. Denkers says at 49 years old, he's got time to make up for those personal losses in his 401k. But it's a different story in his work life.
Now, I run a charitable foundation, so our giving is based on what the value of our foundation is worth. And that certainly troubles me. So I do have to watch the stock market. I do have to watch what is happening in financial markets, because when you see a 20 or 30% hit to your giving, and that's scary.
In real money terms, they've lost about $30 million in 6 months. And that ultimately means less money for shelters and food programs and other social services. I asked Denkers what his great-uncle might think of the current financial crisis. After all, Eccles helped create the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
I would hope and I would believe that he would never have let this unregulated environment occur. I believe that he set into place that there's a free market and then there's a market that needs to be regulated, because greed will always take you to the furthest extreme, and there has to be a way. I mean, when companies and banks and brokerage firms are hiring physicists to come up with equations to value and turn a mortgage that isn't worth anything into something of value, that's crazy.
That's Stephen Denkers. We also heard from Mayor Ralph Becker and John Spiros, the owner of Lamb's Grill Cafe, all with a view from Main Street in Salt Lake City. We'll have more from our road trip later in the broadcast.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to the success of small businesses and nonprofits. You can learn about email marketing at constantcontact.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org.
And this is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. Looks like the second time is the charm for the House of Representatives. Members voted, some probably grudgingly, to pass the administration's financial bailout package. And joining me to talk about all this is our own Bob Moon, who is with me here in Salt Lake City. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Tess. Well, you know, it's been an incredible week, but this will give you some idea. I've been looking for a single soundbite that would kind of cover the mood that we have seen in Washington all this week, and I think I found it.
This is a stick-up.
Mister, put down that gun.
Shut up. I said this is a stick-up. Now, come on. Your money or your life?
I said your money or your life. I'm thinking it over.
I think that pretty much sums up the tone in Washington right now. We've had a week in which Congress initially balked at this program, and then we saw a very sharp change in attitude, and I think that was reflected in a quote from a Republican senator from here in Utah, Robert Bennett. He said it's ordinary people looking at ordinary pensions with their ordinary Main Street kind of 401k plans who lost more than $1 trillion of value in their accounts And that is what I think changed the mood in Washington to a more positive response to the plan.
And the mood didn't only change in Washington, at least from the few cities that I visited this week. I did not get a sense of the seething anger that I think we saw even a week ago. This week, it was more a tone of resignation. The idea that, you know what, we're going to have a bailout package. And the concern was, if we're going to have one, let's at least make it a responsible one. I have to tell you, Bob, that the other concern that I am hearing, again, on Main Street, is people are very worried about their banks, the banking system. Wall Street or no Wall Street, they're concerned about their deposits because we keep seeing bank after bank get bought up. We're kind of at a point where it seems like we have maybe three or four big banks in this country. And people wonder if that's a good thing.
Bank after bank get bought up or fail.
Or fail, yeah.
For that matter. And you're right. We've seen really this kind of wave of forced consolidation in the industry. We've now got J.P. Morgan, the largest bank by deposits. We've got Citigroup, the largest bank by assets. Bank of America, which was the largest bank until those other two banks kind of skipped ahead of them. And what that means is that you have fewer choices. You have fewer places to go for credit. And with credit so tight right now, if you're a small business, for example, you have, you know, far fewer choices to tap. And that is going to be a problem not only for small businesses, but for people trying to get a mortgage, that sort of thing. We aren't seeing it really strongly at the retail level just yet. But it seems to be coming very soon.
And I think that's being reflected here in Salt Lake City with a couple of the construction projects underway.
That's right. In fact, we heard from one construction company here that a project on Main Street, oddly enough, had to be put on hold because the developer could not get the funding required to continue the project.
Bob, why is money so tight if we keep hearing that the Fed and central banks all over the world are pumping all this money into the worldwide economy, and yet credit is still so short?
Well, let me see if I can paint a word picture for you. Imagine the fire hose is going. It is just gushing out that money right now to make sure that there's an adequate money supply around the world. What's happening is it's going directly into the coffers of those banks, into the vaults of those banks. So the fire hose is wide open, and they're drinking it all up right now.
But they're not sharing it.
That's right. And one of the problems is that until they fill up their vaults and don't have to worry about making their own payments, we're probably not going to see that money. That's what the rescue plan has been all about.
Well, there is another source of funding if you're not looking at, you know, the big major banks in this country. You still have a lot of community banks out there, right?
That's true, although there is concern about their future as well. As a matter of fact, early in the week, we saw Sovereign Bank Corp, National City stock tank by 60%. So there is still real worry about the status of those banks. And we hope that there won't be a lot of bank failures. We hope that the rescue plan might take care of some of that.
All right. To be continued. Once again, thanks so much for coming in, Bob.
Thanks, Tess. Enjoy your trip.
If you've got decades of work ahead of you, you're probably taking the advice you hear on this show quite a bit. Markets recover, you have time to recover. But when the Dow drops 800 points in one day, are you still buying it?
We've been raised with this, stick it out for the long term, but is there a point when that rule no longer applies?
Our coverage of the fallout from the financial crisis continues in a moment on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland, and our special coverage of the financial crisis continues from Salt Lake City. We wanted to hear what's on folks' minds here, so we asked reporter Dan Bomas of station KUER to take the pulse of a few Utahns.
I think everybody has to be somewhat concerned, whether it's here in Utah or all across the country, yes.
Because of this, are you doing anything different with your own personal investments?
Not really, no.
Has it changed the way you plan your savings?
Definitely. Every month, at least $200 I have to put aside for, I have two boys, mm-hmm. so for each one of them, mm-hmm. just in case if we have another crash in the economy.
Is it giving you some concern about your future?
I think I'll be okay, but of course I want to just make good choices.
Always excellent advice. You may remember last week we brought you the voices of listeners who are close to retirement or in it. For them, the economic uncertainty means an immediate change of plans. Well, this week we asked some younger Americans for their thoughts, and we found it's no less complicated for them.
I'm Kristen from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and I'm 29. I kind of vary from being really worried about it. It seems like one of the most scary things that's happened in my lifetime, and then kind of not really caring because it doesn't affect me too much right now.
I'm Jenny, and I'm calling from Austin, Texas, 24 years old. And I feel like it's going to end up okay, but it is a scary situation.
I'm Delian Reichef, and I'm calling from Birmingham, Michigan. I'm 26 years old. Coming from a former communist country, Bulgaria, I'm always optimistic about America. I haven't lost hope.
My name is Rachel, and I'm from the Cincinnati area in Ohio, 39, so plenty of years away from retirement. I know I don't want to take anything out, but does it make sense continuing to contribute to the 401k? As of last night, it had lost 20%. There's no guarantee that this will be here tomorrow.
I work in nonprofit fundraising. If the economy's bad and no one is giving, they don't need people to do that. If I did lose my job right now, I would probably be able to last about a month.
I just started my first job. I finished my PhD over the summer. I haven't even gotten my first paycheck yet, so I have no money in retirement yet. I had no trouble getting my mortgage. I just bought a house. I don't have any money in the stock market. I've got very little to lose, you know.
Well, I think people should invest their money, if not the same amount, perhaps even more. That's what I'm doing.
Now I'm wondering if it might be the time to buy, that things could actually be brighter for me than I had imagined.
I have already made a plan of purchasing a few stocks that I see as undervalued, and I can't wait to get my salary and invest. Of course, I have to pass that by my wife.
In the back of my mind, the huge risk there is it's possible we could enter into like a 10-year depression, and even that money that you invested would be gone.
We've been raised with this stick it out for the long term. But is there a point when that rule no longer applies? And is anybody going to tell us before it's too late?
Psychiatrist Richard Peterson isn't going to tell you it's all in your head. Nope. The monsters in the closet are real. If you want to know what they look like, just check your investment portfolio. But as a hedge fund manager with an MD, he will tell you that those monsters can't get you unless you let them. It's all about keeping a clear head to avoid your own meltdown. To do that, we asked him to put Wall Street on the couch and psychoanalyze the market and us.
Thank you.
In your business, as a hedge fund manager and a psychiatrist who studies these things, what are we all doing right now in our heads as we watch this happen?
Essentially, when prices drop as steeply as they have, most people become more afraid. And it actually changes the way that they think about the markets. So these things are a result, actually, of our brain chemistry. It's a response to watching prices drop.
And how do we tend to react to that? What do we do?
Depends. To some extent, people will avoid thinking about it, avoid checking their stock portfolio. At some point, though, when the pain becomes too much, many people will log into their 401k plan website, look at the value, and say, I can't take it anymore. And then they'll panic and sell.
Which is the exact opposite of what you want to do. You never want to sell on the downside.
That's what we've learned over the last couple centuries in the United States. But unfortunately, it's not always true. In fact, if you were in pre-war Germany or Japan, you probably didn't want to be holding any stocks. So there are very rare cases in history, but you're right. In general, you do want to hold through the down times.
On your website, one of the headlines that you have there is fear index highest in history. Tell us about the fear index.
Well, we have the market psych fear index, which measures words like fear, panic, anxiety used in relation to investors in the financial media. For example, a headline says investors panic today. Then we would pick that up and we'd score it. And we found that over the last 26 years that we've been keeping track, that in fact our fear index now is higher than it's ever been, higher than 1987 crash, higher than after 9/11. And it appears that it's probably the highest since the Great Depression, since 1929.
Then how do you explain to people what's going on without contributing to a panic. People see that, and don't they just freak out even more?
What we'd like to do is we show it to people and we say, look, every other time that it peaked, as it's doing now, right now it has a very sharp acceleration and a peak. And we say, look at stock prices. It was always a great time to buy over the next several years. But for most of us, the fear changes, like I said, it changes the way we think. Our stress hormones, cortisol, causes us to see only day-to-day price action and to feel like it's very relevant for us. This is done for a good evolutionary reason, which is that if we experience stress, we want to make sure we know where all the threats are in our environment. But the reality is that's exactly the wrong type of thinking for this type of environment. You really need to be expanding your horizon, looking at the long term.
You are a psychiatrist. Put me on the couch and tell me how I deal with that fear, that growing fear, that sense that I'm now following every single little thing that could go wrong. How do I fight that so that I don't make the wrong decisions?
Well, the first thing is to make sure that you don't make any rash moves right now. Get into a position where you can be analytical.
How do you do that?
Right. Well, what I would say is make sure you're getting your exercise, you're eating right, take some deep breaths.
Really?
Yeah.
The basics?
The basics. Think about your family. Are you happy and healthy right now? Think about the things in your life that you enjoy. Get yourself out of the fear frame. Think about that house that you want in retirement. Do you want a 4-bedroom, 3-bath house on the lake? If you want to respond to your short-term fear now, you might be missing out on that longer-term gain.
Well, you talk about the fear that is involved here, and I wonder, how do people get away from that? What is going to bring them back?
People have to like what they're going to buy, and they have to feel like it's really cheap, like it's a good bargain. And those are two separate areas of the brain. If you can activate one of those, you know, get people to really like something or make it really cheap so they think it's a good deal. That's how you get people to buy. And it kind of explains why you see the carpet store that always says going out of business, you know, that there are a lot of opportunities out there. There's a lot of cheap stocks. There's a lot of stocks selling at a discount. And at the same time, there's a lot of really neat companies. The problem is when people are owning something already, one reason they might need to sell it and buy something new is they don't like what they owned that's been dropping. They don't like it anymore. Why would they put more money into that mutual fund? Yeah, they're not even thinking. So they've got to change tack. They've got to get out of that mutual fund and look for something else. Look for another story. Look for another something that can motivate you.
Dr. Richard Peterson is a founder of Market Psych. It's a hedge fund that makes investments based on the psychology that we've been talking about here. And he's also a practicing psychiatrist. Thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome, Tess.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. By Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor through innovative grant-making and educational funding. Online at finrafoundation.org.
It's time for Getting Personal when we take to the phones and email to answer some of your many, many questions on the air. And with me, as always, is our own economics editor, Chris Farrell. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Tess.
And again, we are wading through a ton of questions during this financial crisis. Lots of topics and interesting things to get to. And first, we have Valerie on the line from San Diego. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, how are you today? Thank you for answering my call. I'm really happy about that.
It's our pleasure. How are you holding up?
Oh, I'm good. I'm a born optimist. I'm really good.
Well, you're one of the very few out there right now, I think. Well, what can we do for you? What's your question for Chris today?
Okay, I'm weighing up a reverse mortgage or keeping my own mortgage. I want to know if at the moment, would a reverse mortgage be the right thing to do.
Okay. Do you already have a mortgage on your home?
Yes. It's an option arm adjustable due for a new payment come January.
Oh, boy. Chris, we never like to hear about option arms, do we?
No, we don't. Okay, there's a couple things. First of all, let's think about the reverse mortgage. And this is the way retirees, because you have to be over 62 in order to take out a reverse mortgage, tap into the equity of their home and turn it into an income to help support their standard of living.
And Valerie, would you qualify?
Yes.
In your situation, I think it's more important for you to be thinking about, okay, how do I deal with this adjustable rate option arm?
I did call a bank and been into the bank and got two really good offers. But that was last week.
And which bank are you with?
I was with Washington Mutual.
Well, now you're with J.P. Morgan Chase.
Right. you never know from day to day these days what your bank's name is going to be.
You're now with the largest bank measured by deposits in the United States. So if you got two good offers, probably they're not going to change.
Yeah, for 5.87.
5.87% fixed rate. That looks like a pretty good mortgage to me. But for most people where reverse mortgages make sense, Tess, is when your house is paid off. With Valerie's case, reverse mortgage, we put that aside.
I think I should give it 5 years or so, maybe 15.
Okay, does that help you out, Valerie?
Yes, that's good. Thank you.
All right, well, thanks so much for the call. Well, Chris, let's go to a few emails, and we've been getting a lot of them about so-called PODs, and these are payable on death accounts at banks. And let me read you an email from Denise in Elk River, Minnesota. If a couple has a bank account titled in a revocable trust that is jointly owned, and they have three children as beneficiaries, and they have $600,000 in this one account, are they insured for all $600,000 through the FDIC?
Okay, the pod. We're not talking aliens. Okay, no aliens here. And this is an area where it really matters how things are labeled. If the beneficiary are the children, the Bill and Sue, no problem, but it can't be a niece or a nephew. It can be a grandparent, but not an in-law. My main piece of advice, you go to www.fdic.gov, and they have a new publication that deals with living trusts, family trusts, of which the pod is one. There's a calculator there, so you can take your accounts, and you can figure out how much are you insured at one institution, or uninsured at that institution.
Okay, and we will have a link to the FDIC site on our website. And Chris, we have a little bit of clarification to do on money market accounts. These have been in the news as well because money market mutual funds have gotten in trouble a couple of weeks ago, and then the federal government stepped in and said, oh, it's okay, we're going to backstop these. But Scott from Cincinnati wrote in and said he wanted to know if money market accounts are insured by the government, up to what amount?
There is a lot of confusion in this area. And by the way, if you go to the Getting Personal segment on the Marketplace website, I've posted the press release from the Treasury and the FAQs that they posted. The bottom line for most people is that if you are in a money market mutual fund that participates in the program, the money that you had in there as of September 19th will not break a buck. Your $1 million will be $1 million.
And after September 19th, not protected?
That's what they say.
It sounds like it's also then very important to check with your institution to see whether they are participating.
Absolutely, because it's up to the institution.
If they have a money market mutual fund that is not participating in the government backstop, would you recommend they move it to one that is?
Directly to your question, the answer is yes. But let me think of the gradations. As you know, Tess, I've always recommended you want to be in the really conservative money market mutual fund. You want the one that's basically treasury bills, and you get a little bit above that. If this is money you cannot take a risk with, then I say forget yield, forget return. You turn to the U.S. government, Treasury Direct, www.treasurydirect.gov, and you buy your treasury bills directly. No commission costs from the U.S. government, default free.
All right, complicated stuff. We're so glad that we have Chris with us to help us out with all of this. And you can call and ask us a question anytime. Our number is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. And Chris is answering quite a few questions on his blog now. That's at marketplace.org. Click on Getting Personal. And you can email us a question through that website as well. And we will be back with more Getting Personal later in the show. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. Go, go, line, line, go, go, line, line, go. Utah is no stranger to crises, usually of biblical proportions. Plagues of crickets eat the crops. Mines collapse. And through it all, Utahns came together and forged ahead. How does that pioneer spirit carry into today's financial upheaval? Well, for our visit to Salt Lake City, we turned to local journalist and author Ken Verdoya. He briefed us on the economic history of the place, going back to the 1840s.
In pioneering settlement, Salt Lake City was balanced on the head of a pin of agriculture, subsistence agriculture, if you will. Pioneer farms trying to produce enough food for the network of Mormons that had settled the Salt Lake Valley area.
Oh, what a dreary place this was when first the Mormons found it. They said the land, it was no good, and the water was no gooder, and the bare idea of living here was enough to make men shudder.
That doesn't change until the 1870s with the first infusion of non-Mormons, and they begin a mining boom, which drives the economy all the way up into the Great Depression of the 1930s. When mining prices teeter in the East Coast, your mining economy goes under. Utah was devastated by the effects of the Great Depression, huge unemployment numbers in Utah, and they had a sense that the only people they could count on was each other. They developed a very progressive social welfare system in the 1930s that became the envy of the New Deal. Roosevelt administration people were sent out to Salt Lake City to study the Mormon church's welfare system for caring for its own. Every Mormon in good standing gives 10% back to the church for the pool of funds that provide food, clothing, and shelter for members that are in a time of trial. But in the instant case, this church has an extraordinary ability to render assistance to members in good standing that are in financial crisis. The Salt Lake City population is now pretty evenly balanced between Mormon and non-Mormon. On one hand, we have these personal traits of fiscal austerity, conservative and saving money for a rainy day. And yet, conversely, we have this dark side that wants to make a quick buck the easy way. We have been routinely victimized by stock fraud, by confidence schemes. We have been the financial fraud capital of North America at times. Utah is still considered this crossroads of the American West, still this largely rural, largely isolated economic enclave that goes it on its own and moves to a slightly different drummer, many times 18 to 24 months behind the national economic trends.
That was Utah historian Ken Verdoya. Most mortgage lenders are tightening the screws these days. 20% upfront, fixed interest rate. But one federal program still lets people put down zero.
Putting nothing into a home is risky, not only for the government that's backing the loan and the taxpayer, but also for the borrower.
We ask if it's a lawless loophole or valuable outreach as we continue our coverage of the financial crisis from Middle America on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland with our ongoing look at the fallout from the financial crisis. Throughout the show, we've been talking with people here in Salt Lake City. And this week, I was also in San Francisco and Reno, Nevada. And you know what? People are worried. All the advice they've gotten over the years, sock money away in your 401ks and IRAs, be more aggressive about your future. What does that all mean now? Well, if you're lucky, you're one of thousands of Americans who have help, a professional financial planner. On this week's A Day in the Work Life, we sit down with one.
My name is Rick Zettelmoyer. I'm the owner of Valley West Financial Services in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I do financial planning for younger people who need to begin some form of retirement planning. My strongest encouragement to younger people is to begin putting money away as soon as they possibly can and just forget about it. Most of my clients who are in their late 20s, early 30s are well aware of the fact that Social Security will most likely not be there to bail them out. The biggest fear that individuals have that I meet with on an everyday basis is they are afraid that their assets will not last as long as they do. It's not like my parents and so forth, everybody lived and got a job based on pensions and so forth. I also work with pre-retirement individuals between the ages of 45 and 70. But some people, you just never know what you're walking into. I recently ran across a couple who have been married for 34 years. And when I meet with couples, I will ask each of them, you know, define retirement for me. Now, you have to understand, I'm sitting there at a conference table, and his wife is sitting at one end. He's at the other end. I'm right in the middle. And his reply was, well, I really don't need all this, meaning his house and property and this. All I really need is a shack in the woods, a couple bottles of wine, the dogs, and to be as far away from her as possible. This being the first time that I actually met with these people, I didn't really know what to say. So I turned to the wife and said, you know, Joan, I'm really not accustomed to getting that kind of response. What would you say, you know, is your definition of retirement, or what are your desires in retirement? And her reply was, well, I absolutely, positively, 100% concur with him. I would say your first year as an independent, if you have at least a 3 or 4 year established track record, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't be close to $100,000 a year. I do think you do hit a ceiling, and I think that ceiling would be probably around $200,000 a year. The frustrating times for me is running across a client, and many times they will first become a client when they're already in a serious situation. Then I will get the phone call. Seeing an individual that's maybe 4 or 5 years away from retirement, that you've helped them put a plan together, that would be the most rewarding thing. I would say that if I had known then what I know now, I would have been much more of a student of investing and putting money away and taking certain risks. I think it's easier to take the risks when you're younger.
That was Rick Zettelmeyer, an independent financial planner. A Day in the Work Life was reported by Julie Miller.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
We are back with more Getting Personal, and with me once again to answer your questions is our own personal finance expert, Chris Farrell. And Chris, let's go right to emails. Donna from Montpelier, Vermont wants to know a little bit more about SIPC protection. And Chris, this is the backstop to investment houses, kind of the equivalent of the FDIC with banks, right?
Correct, although a slightly different mission. And in fact, if you go to the SIPC website, SIPC.org, they go, we are not the FDIC. Here's what we are. But it still offers protection. It's sort of like the first line of defense in case a brokerage house fails.
Okay, which we've never heard of that happening, right?
Oh, let me see. Maybe.
Lehman Brothers, anybody? Yeah.
I'm exhausted.
Okay, so
just thinking about the list.
Me too. All right. Well, so Donna is a little confused. On the one hand, she has heard that investors have up to $500,000, $500,000 of portfolio protection if the firm that has the portfolio goes under, say, Lehman Brothers. But then she's heard us say that Lehman shareholders are left holding the bag, that their shares no longer have any value. So I think she's trying to figure out if SIPC protects not only people who had accounts with Lehman, but also shareholders with Lehman. And it doesn't protect shareholders, right?
Absolutely not. If you're a shareholder of Lehman, you know, you got some nice new wallpaper. It's bankrupt. In essence, you're wiped out. Use it on tax time to offset some capital gains or some income. There's where the real value, by the way, of Lehman shares are for existing shareholders. But SIPC has nothing to do with protecting the shareholders in Lehman itself.
Okay. Well, there you go, Donna. Hope that helped. Chris, we got quite a few questions over last weekend after we talked about the protection that is provided to customers of credit unions. And there are a lot of them out there. And wanted to clear up a point that we made about what kind of signage you should look for if you decide to become a credit union customer. And you want to clear this up for us?
Yes, I made a mistake, and I apologize for causing any confusion. When you walk into a bank, you look for that FDIC sign, right?
Right.
So when you walk into a credit union and you want to be sure that this credit union has the FDIC equivalent, you want to see a sign that says NCUA. That's the key, whether it's federally chartered, state chartered, put all that aside. What I like to see, what gives me reassurance, and I think what should give most people reassurance at times of trouble, is you want a federal backstop, and that federal backstop is NCUA, or that's the sign that gives you that signal.
Well, hopefully we clarified that one, and let's move on. We have had a number of calls and emails on the question of whether this financial crisis means that folks should change their approach to paying back student loans. Rick is in the military, and he's in El Paso, Texas, and he asked us about that.
I recently graduated from law school and joined the Army as a JAG officer. I make a good, livable, steady income and wanted to know if it was smarter to pay off loans at an accelerated rate while foregoing investing towards retirement for a few years, or if I should put money into some particular you're-dumb-if-you-don't-do-it-as-early-as-possible retirement fund, like an IRA, while paying off my student loans on the 10-year plan.
So, Chris, this really reflects a lot of emails that we're getting about how to prioritize where your money goes these days. What's your advice for Rick?
Well, my advice for Rick still comes down to I still want younger people to be putting money into a retirement savings plan. And the military also, through the Thrift Savings Plan, has a very good plan to invest in. I would also, however, not turn this into an either-or question. You still want to take advantage of a retirement savings plan. And the older you get, the more you realize you can never make up for the time.
So no matter what the financial situation for this country, a lot of the same basic advice still stands. Even with all the changes out there, the basics stay the same.
That's exactly right. And in fact, the times that we are in right now, they bring you back to the basics. And there's a reason why people advise doing certain things, such as participating in that retirement savings plan when you're young, even if you are in the midst of one of the worst markets that we've been in for a long time.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for questions today. Give us a call. We're at 877-275-6669 or 877-ASK-MONEY. And we, of course, are taking all of your email questions 24 hours a day at marketplace.org. Just look for the Getting Personal link. And we will continue answering your questions on how the financial crisis is affecting your money as the weeks roll on. Thanks so much for your help, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Tess.
Check the technique, see if you can follow it. Check the technique, see if you can follow it.
As we heard earlier in the show, Utah's economy often lags behind the rest of the nation. And according to local real estate broker Randall Wall, Salt Lake City isn't such a bad place to buy or sell a home right now.
For $250,000 and below, we're at about a six-month average sales time. And I was talking to some friends of mine back in the Midwest, and they said that properties in that range are looking at 2 to 3 years.
Meanwhile, amid all the news from Washington this week, a new federal housing act took effect this Wednesday. It's supposed to provide relief to homeowners, incentives to buyers, and add more oversight to the mortgage industry. As Rachel Dornhelm reports, one of the practices being eliminated is something called down payment assistance.
This was your last week to buy a home for zero money down with one popular program. As the clock ticked, there was a huge online move for a reversal.
Hi, I'm Russell Simmons. Homeownership is very important to fulfill the American dream.
Even a hip-hop megastar got in on the act.
Let's support equal housing opportunities for all. I support down payment assistance.
Here's an example of down payment assistance. Say you want to get into a new development. You go to the bank for a loan, but the loan officer tells you in these days of tight credit, you need a down payment. But you don't have that cash on hand, so you go to the developer for help. The developer sends you to a nonprofit, which the builder may actually operate or fund. The nonprofit gives you the down payment you need. Now that you have that money for a down payment, the bank gives you a loan. The deal closes, you get your house. The developer gets his money back on the sale, minus a small transaction fee to the nonprofit. Jerry Howard is president of the National Association of Home Builders. He says everyone ends up happy.
We're being told by many of our builders that it is the single most valuable tool in getting some of these recalcitrant buyers to come into the game.
Howard says until this week, 30% of new home sales were being financed with some kind of down payment assistance. As the credit markets froze up, buyers looked for a way around banks' new lending restrictions. The Nehemiah Corporation is just one of a number of nonprofits that ran down payment assistance programs for FHA-approved buyers. They helped with new and existing home sales. Kevin Koenig is National Director of Outreach. He says doing away with seller down payment assistance risks throttling one of the engines of this country's growth.
Doesn't make sense that we're spending all this money to generate more activity in the economy, and yet we're cutting out something that's not going to cost the taxpayers anything and will generate $150 billion.
But allowing Americans to own homes with no money on deposit is dangerous, says Howard Glazer. He was general counsel at the Department of Housing and Urban Development during the Clinton administration. Now, he's a mortgage industry consultant.
In a market that's now flat and declining, putting nothing into a home is risky not only for the government that's backing the loan and the taxpayer, but also for the borrower, because they can very quickly find themselves underwater in the house the day after they move in.
Aware of those risks, the National Association of Home Builders, Howard, is backing a bill that would reinstate the program but add some hurdles. Howard says some buyers would have to pay higher mortgage insurance, for example, and get home buyers counseling.
I think the housing industry, like the financial industry right now, is very cognizant of our responsibility as citizens, and that's why we're in favor of some of these much tighter underwriting criteria for these types of home buyers.
Down payment assistance can help low and moderate income Americans buy homes. Consultant Howard Glazer supports that aim, but says Congress should wait until the housing market stabilizes before considering the new program. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace Money.
And this is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. All right, we have reached the end of our show. And with us once again for The Straight Story is our own Chris Farrell. And Chris, what a week. Did you think when it started that we would actually see a bailout plan passed?
I was stunned at the beginning of the week when it didn't pass. And like a lot of people, despaired in the middle of the week. And I am glad that we finally got some legislation.
But how much good is this actually going to do? When Monday comes, will this save us?
It's not going to save us. It's going to contain a crisis. You know, part of the problem, Tess, and just in the tone of your question, you know, it's almost been as if the civilization of the United States and the global economy is dependent on the bailout.
Well, that's what we've been told.
But that's not the case. There's a couple things that I think people need to focus on. I mean, I think this will help contain the crisis. It's not going to solve the crisis. There are going to be additional bank failures. There are going to be additional failures in the financial services system. What this helps is to deal with that situation and hopefully to bring back confidence so that we get some borrowing and we get some lending. That's what this is all about.
How long then do you think it's going to take us to get the banking system back to normal, where that credit is moving freely?
I think we're talking years.
Wow.
Now, first of all, companies, we're going to learn a term, RIF, reduction in force.
Layoffs.
That's what all company managements are talking about. So we're going to have recession. I think it's very important if you look, and I know it's New York City and Wall Street, you know, is in New York City, but New York City going to cut their budget by $1.5 billion.
Yeah, they've been talking even here in Los Angeles about, you know, taking a look at the budget because it's not going to be a pretty thing for a long time to come.
Absolutely. And the one other thing I want to mention that I think is sort of a long-term implication of this, Tess, I think we've lost a lot of confidence in our political leaders.
I have to agree. I mean, at least judging from, you know, the responses that we've gotten from the audience, people are not only furious, but they don't trust government anymore to do the right thing, the best thing for the country, that it became all about politics this week.
Exactly. The response was the response of people behaving like political pygmies as opposed to statesmen and stateswomen. And I think everyone has that sense. And they're frightened about that in the lack of political leadership. So there are some long-term implications of the period that we've been going through. And one other point to emphasize, you know, all the blood and screaming and everything that's been invested in this, it's going to be rewritten.
It's going to be rewritten in the next couple of months.
You mean the legislation? It's going to be rewritten?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff is not written stone. We'll learn what works. We'll learn what doesn't work. It'll be modified. It'll be changed. We'd learned from experience, and the International Monetary Fund did this study, and they looked at other previous crises around the world. And one of the lessons from that study is that, you know what? 3 months from now, we'll get a new legislation. We'll make a change here. We'll make a change there. Hopefully, we make it better.
I guess we'll end on that very hopeful note, Chris. Thanks so much.
You know I am an eternal optimist. It's been a little bit strained, but still take a slightly optimistic take.
Sounds good to me. Thanks.
Okay.
And that's Marketplace Money. I'll be traveling the country again this week with more stories of how average Americans are coping with this financial crisis. Tune in for our special coverage, The Road to Ruin, on Marketplace programs throughout the week. And be sure to check out our website. We've got photos and blogs. And, of course, we always welcome your comments. Marketplace Money is produced by Nancy Fargali, with Jim Wallace, Stephen Hoffman, Eve Tro, and the rest of the Marketplace staff. And a very special thanks to everyone here at KUER in Salt Lake City. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Remember, talk to your own expert before you make any big money decisions. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
Want to hear something on Marketplace Money again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and information on transcripts, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just point your browser to marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is supported by Thrive and Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thriveand.com. American Public Media.